Good morning. Last week, we discussed a number of exceptions to the Seder HaYerusha, different assets that do not pass BYerusha. And to just very briefly review, we discussed a life insurance policy, a term life insurance policy that has beneficiaries. So over there, according to most Paiskim, we will not follow the Seder HaYerusha. The death benefit is not an asset that the deceased owned. Adaraba, he paid the insurance company that Lachamev Estrim, they should pay out to whoever these beneficiaries are, and therefore, since it wasn't something that he owned, it would not be subject to the Hilchus Yerusha. A joint account as well, if a person puts money into a joint account, so loy miboy, it's mistama a shutfis right away. As soon as you put it in, you're giving your spouse or the joint account holder a share, a shutfis in the money. And whether it's a 50% or 100%, a joint tenancy or tenants in common. But there probably is a kinyan that is chal right away. Now, yesh lo doin exactly how the kinyan works in halacha. There's no zechiyah. If the bank is a goy, there's a problem of zechiyah. But between dina malchus adina and minog, mistama does work, and therefore with the joint account, the joint account holder would also have a kinyan, at least half. If there are rights of survival, so that as well, that's a little bit more questionable in halacha. But when any account where there's a rights of survival or a POD account, there's also makom to say that since you lent it out to the goy with the understanding and the condition that it be paid to the beneficiary lachamei v'esrim. So it is yitochen, it would work, either mitzad the kinyan, or perhaps al tzmitzvah kaim divrei hameis. That's something that we'll discuss more in a future shir, and it's very mistaver that it will work. That it will be effective, this money will not be subject to Hilchus Yerusha. Now, we said over a chiddush from Mishloim Mahayman, he had a chiddush, a lomdish way of looking at a bank account, that if you look at a bank account that you lent money to the bank, the bank owes it back to you, that even if a person dies, even if alpi halacha one would argue that the yarshim, the sons, are entitled to that money, they have no way of getting that money. If the spouse or a daughter goes and convinces the bank to pay the money to them, so in a technical sense, they're not really stealing from the son. Because in a technical sense, the bank's choiv to the son is still there. The bank went ahead and paid someone who they shouldn't have, perhaps, al pi halacha. But it's not like the spouse or the daughter is taking money that belongs to the son for themselves. It's a choiv, it's a debt, it's not something which you could take someone else's choiv, it's not the same money. And therefore, Shlomo says that there would be no problem taking the money, even if technically, al pi halacha, the sons would yarshin it. Now, someone pointed out correctly that if you this only applies when you have a bank account when there's a debt. You have money in a bank account. On the other hand, if you have a retirement account that has stocks, that has bonds, that has holdings, so there the bank is a shomer, it's a pikadon. You own the stocks, you own the shares of the mutual fund. The bank is simply watching it for you. So in that case, if Lachameva Estrim, if that should go be that would fall be Yerusha. And that's something which the Yerushim would have a claim to. And if you go ahead, if someone else goes ahead and takes it, Rav Shlomo Hyman's Svara would not apply, since here we're dealing with a physical asset that really belongs to the Yerushim, and taking it away would be a problem of al pi halacha. Again, perhaps we'll have mitzvah kaim devrei hameis, we'll have the Svara of kinyanim, but Rav Shlomo Hyman's Svara would not apply. Yeah, because the bond is something which you have a treasury. You bought it. The bank is holding it for you. But it's not a loan to the bank. It might be a loan to the United States government. But what you're dealing with here is who has control over this particular bond. And the bank could give it to the Yerushim, or they can give it to the beneficiary. So Shlomo Hyman's Svara will not apply in such a case. What? That's true. In a margin account, we'll actually discuss in Hilchos Bechor, but if at the time of death, that was lent out to someone who sold the stock short, then it's just, there's no physical asset to be a Yerusha. It's a choiv or an obligation they have to replace that stock or that asset. And enechami, then Shlomo would apply. Now, I don't know how you're ever going to figure, I don't know if there's a way to figure out whether it was lent out at that time. But I don't know if it's called. I don't know if that's called like milva lo hitzot. The fact that they have the right to take it and to use it, I don't know if that goes to the level of milva lo hitzot. Kol zman they don't take it. I think it's you're a direct owner. It's not like a halva, which the moment you give it to them, the money is no longer yours. That's a loan. We'll actually discuss money when we get to Hilchos Bechor a little bit later today. But pashtus, the money in the bank is that you lent it to them. That there's no, it's not sitting in the vault. It's not in a safe deposit box. It's a loan that you gave them. Now, regardless, we have many svaras in all of these cases. But the bottom line is, this is not very clear lahalacha, and it's kedai when a person writes a will, he writes it tzava to address all of these will substitutes, so as not to go into any shilus. Again, when we discuss the tzava, we'll get back to this. But again, these are just, if there's no tzava, there's strong makom to say these things are not subject to Hilchos Yerusha, but l'chadchila, certainly a person should deal with it with his other estate planning. Now, an interesting question that came up, this was actually a more common a number of years ago, but there were a number of shilos where a person, his parents or grandparents, lived in Europe, and their assets were confiscated during World War II. And after the war, the German government paid reparations. And the question is, if they paid reparations, who's entitled to this money? Do you go with the Seder HaYerusha? Goes to the sons, Pishnayim, regular Seder Yerusha? Or do you divide it equally among all the children, the daughters, the sons, based on their rules? So what comes out is a very interesting, there's a very interesting chiluk. You have to really ask, the reparations that are being paid, al pi halacha, does the government owe these reparations or not? Because if, for example, a person had assets, he owned property, the property was seized and it was never returned. So in that case, the Yarshim that property. It's Karka and an Exelis. It belongs to the Yarshim. So if today, a few decades later, the government is willing to reimburse you for that property, essentially to buy out your claim, so then they're buying the property. So if Alpi Halacha, the sons are the ones that Yarshim that property, so they're entitled to the payment for that property. So in such a case, if there is a chi of mammon, if you're actually paying for something that's owed, there's a very strong basis to say that would go with the regular Seder HaYerusha. Masha'ein kein, if they're not paying for property. Masha'ein, if they're paying pashut, they're trying to make amends or whatever, but the political reasons that they have, because of the nefashas, because of someone that was killed, and they're making a payment, which al pi halacha they do not owe. So if they didn't owe anything to the niftar, they don't owe anything to the Yarshim, it's this new obligation, they decided they want to make reparations. So the same way they decide they're going to pay reparations, they can make those payments based on whatever rules they want. And if to them there's no difference between a son and a daughter, they want to pay equally to all the descendants for whatever sort of kapara or whatever exactly they're trying to do. So it has nothing to do with Hilchos Yerusha. Oh, so the Yish, there is a discussion of Yish. Yish, by usually when someone steals something, even if you're Miyayish, there's still a Gazlin still has a Chiyuv to pay. So you can discuss whether if a Gazlin steals something, there's Yish, and he sells it, the actual item doesn't belong to you any longer. But the Chiyuv is still there. A Gazlin that steals always has to pay back, and therefore that would still fall by Yerusha. Oh, so the Pesach Choshen points out that even if you're going to say that al pi halacha, al tzgzela, or perhaps al tzkoifer, whatever it is, there is a chiyuv to pay. He says, but that's on the actual person that stole it. When you're going ahead and you're dealing with a government many years later, and befrat, if the person who did the murder, who took it, is no longer here. So he says, mechatesa, his yarshim will have this chiyuv to the yarshim of the nifter. And therefore, in such a case where there's no chiyuv al pi halacha, then it would not be subject to Yerusha. Now, he also deals with kibush mochama, that perhaps even though there's no yish and karka, perhaps kibush mochama is different. Again, that's a discussion for hilchos gezeila. But the halacha l'maisa is it really depends. If there's a real debt that was owed because they took an asset, so that should go follow the sidrei ha-Yerusha. If it's not a debt, it's just a payment they want to make for whatever their reasons, then heim amru, whatever their rules are. It's actually not so simple. There's actually not so simple. There's a whole discussion. There's a Jewish Ramah that says, really, technically, they're supposed to follow Dinei HaTorah. So again, it's a whole back and forth. Yeah, but that's the Ramah's Chiddush. But it's not so pasha. But even so, this is not a regular din. When they're going ahead, there's no. I don't think there's a din in the Geneva Conventions of reparations. This is a law that they passed later to do whatever they wanted to do. Good, but even if you're going to say that whatever time, there is a concept, which you are correct, there is a concept of that if you have an issue with a guy, so that you have the right to apply their din and take money that you're entitled to. But the same din that says you're entitled to this money says that the sons and daughters are entitled to it equally. So therefore, perhaps if the whole choiv just comes from dinehem, you should have to follow it all the way and everyone should have equal claim. Now there is, again, I did see such a tzad that says no. When it comes to creating a choiv, they'll go b'dinehem. But when it comes to the Hilchus Yerusha, we don't follow dinam Hilchus Yerusha, we follow halacha. You know, there is such a tzad in halacha, but in this particular case, I think the poskim are noted that it would be a split. Now the truth is, just to take this concept a step further, in a case where opi halacha there's no choiv, and it's just b'dinehem, then it could be, if you have a way to get out the money yourself, you have no obligation to share it with your brothers or sisters. Because it's not Yerusha. If it was Hilchus Yerusha, so your siblings are the same Yerush that you are. But if it's not Hilchus Yerusha, it's just they have these rules. If you're able to get it out, so there's no Chiyuv Al Pidin. It doesn't belong to them. They don't necessarily have any rights. I mean, practically speaking, you probably will have to share it with them because you probably have to file papers. But technically, if it's not Yerusha, then it's not really their money. Good. So what a will is a great question, but that's going to be, we're going to have to discuss that in two shiurim. We'll get to what a will is, a legal will, halachic will, that's for future shiur.
The insurance companies gave out generally some Italian insurance website, whoever had, and they gave out, paid out money. Is that a paid issue, I think?
They paid out money for what? For
the Holocaust. I had the money.
Mm-hmm.
So, had insurance policy.
Life insurance?
Life insurance.
Good. So life insurance, as we said, a term life insurance is not something that he ever had, not something that would go be Yerusha. On the other hand, if the person had a beneficiary, and that beneficiary was entitled to that money, and then that beneficiary was Nifter, so from them that would go be Yerusha because it was owed from the company to that beneficiary. That became a choiv as soon as the insured died, and then when the beneficiary died, it should go be Yerusha to whoever their Yerushim are. Okay, so now let's start with Hilchus Bechor. We know that a Bechor gets Pishnayim. A Bechor applied, but how the halacha of Bechor is only in the Nichsei Av, it only applies to the father's Nechasim. There's no din of Bechor by the Nichsei Av. Which means if a person passes away, he leaves a tzavo, he leaves over his assets to his wife. When his wife dies, the bechor will not have any kedima, will not have any pishnayim, because at this point the yerush is coming from the mother, and there is no din of a bechor of pishnayim from the mother. Now, who a bechor is also tali in the father. A bechor means the firstborn of the father. It doesn't make a difference whether the mother had previous children or did not. The bechor, the first child born to the father, has a din of a bechor. However, the bechor has to be born naturally. A yeis adoifin, if there was a cesarean, then the firstborn child does not have the din of a bechor. A nefel, if there is a child, if the firstborn child is a stillborn, so then the next child will still have a din bechor. Even though something was wrong, but since it wasn't a zar shel kayama, the halacha is that the child that comes afterwards still has a din of bechor. Now, what happens if you have twins? How do you know who the bechor is? How do you know? What do you recognize? I mean, as a father, do you know which one? So halacha is that the midwife is neman who the bechor is, right away. So when the child is born, the delivery room, the mother is not, it's not exactly focused on which child came out first. So the chai, the person who's delivering has nemanus. That's only right away. That is as soon as the child is born. After that, for the first week of until the child is 8 days old, until it is ready for a bris, the mother has nemanus. The mother is the one that cares for the children. She's the one that recognizes, and she's the one that knows which is which and which one came out first. The father is Naaman from the bris and on. Seems until the bris, the father didn't care much for the children. He wouldn't be expected to recognize which is which. But once he has a chiyuv of bris mila, he has to mal them. At that point, he pays a little bit more attention to the children. And from there on in, a father has Naamanus to say which child is a bechar. Now, the din of a bechar is he takes pishnayim. He gets a double share. So we pointed out, if there are three children, one of them is Bechar, you divide the Yerusha into four sections. The Bechar gets two Chalakim, and he gets half the Yerusha. The two Pshutim each get a quarter, they get one of the Chalakim, and therefore the Bechar ends up with Pishnayim, the Bechar ends up with double the share that the regular sons get. Now there's a very important exception, and that is the din of Pishnayim is Bechal Asher Yimatzeloi. It's only assets that the father had possession of at the time that he died. However, money which is roi lovei lacharkach, money that was owed to the father, that was going to come in the future, that is not subject to pishnayim. It's subject to Hilchus Yerusha. It will be divided among the Yarshim, but the Bechar does not have any special kedima, does not get pishnayim in anything which is roi. He only gets pishnayim on things that are mochzik. Now, defining roi and mochzik is not so simple today. First question is, it's pretty clear if a person has a bar of gold, he has silver coins, so that's mochzik. He has it in his possession, it's his, certainly the poor would get pishnayim. On the other hand, if the deceased had lent out money to people, so the halacha is, that's roi. That's money that's owed to the father, but it's not tachas yoda, it's not b'chol asher yimatzei loy, and there the poor will not get pishnayim. What are dollar bills? Is that something which is mochzik? Or is that a debt that you have against Uncle Sam? So if you hear the Poskim will write that even though technically speaking it might technically be an obligation, although today it's not even backed by gold, or it's not backed by anything anymore. But even when it was backed, and technically you can call it a loan, since it is used as currency, it is used to buy and sell, it's accepted in the marketplace as cash, it is money. So the other place can all write that would have a din of mochzik, and the Bechor would get pishnayim to any cash that the deceased had with him at the time that he died. Probably not. So now there is what seems to be a machloikas about government bonds. The Noi Yehuda writes that a government bond that might be very secure, or at least they used to be very secure, but the bottom line is it's a debt. It's a debt, just like a very wealthy person that has a debt, you still say it's roi, it's not b'chalash or yimatzah loi, there's no pishnayim. So Noi Yehuda writes that government bonds would have the same halacha. Now the Aruch HaShulchan argues, the Aruch HaShulchan says that government bonds have a din of muchzik. But if you look at the Aruch HaShulchan, his case is pretty clear from the way he says it, that number one, the bond that was already due, you were able to collect it whenever you wanted. And number two, you were able to use it as money. You can go into a store, you can give the bond, and you can use it to buy things. So such a bond is the equivalent or similar to what to cash, the currency that we have today. And although it's paper, although it represents an obligation that the government has, since it's used as cash, you can use it as money, it has a din of mochzik. Today, a government bond, where you can't go to a grocery and try to buy something with a treasury, it's liquid. There's a very well developed market to sell it, but you can't use it just to buy and sell in a regular marketplace. I think l'kulayamo that would have a din of roi, that would not have a din of mochzik, and the bechor would not get pishnayim. You do find the machlokes that in Eretz Yisrael some say that it has a din of cash when you write a check. It's true, there is such a jidim. In the United States, I think I think even the poskim that hold its cash in Eretz Yisrael would not say it over here. In Eretz Yisrael, there are much more stricter rules about canceling checks. and therefore it's passed from one person to another pretty regularly. Today, it just in America, it just isn't. Certainly, the insurance policy. There's nothing here. It's a debt. They just a contract with a company, and therefore certainly there will be no pishnayim in an insurance policy.
No, you can sell notes also.
That's true. The Aruch HaShulchan's point is not that you can sell it. His point is it's accepted as currency. When you can walk into you can't walk into a grocery and try to buy milk with an IOU note. You could go into a grocery and buy money with a dollar. Now, a dollar might technically, if you want to be technical, say it represents a choyev on the government, but since today it's used as currency, it's used as cash, Yerach HaShulchan says, there a bechor would get pishnayim. An IOU note, even though you can find people to buy anything, that doesn't mean it means it's roi, it means it's people willing to buy things that are roi.
So I assume a house and top deposits.
That's certainly muksik. It's a hard asset, and there a bechor certainly would get pishnayim in a house, and diamonds, in any No, it's not a question of selling. In the house, you have tachas yodcha. You have possession of the house. You're living in the house. You're using the house. You don't have to collect the house. It's something that you
can't buy milk with
it. No. Slow. A house is murzik because you have the house. You're living in it, and you have possession. The same way you have a diamond in your pocket, it's murzik not because you can sell it. It's murzik because you have it. You have control of it. When we're dealing with debts, they already were saying that a regular debt is roy. The kind of debt that is treated as money is considered muksik because you have it here today. The proof that it's money and not just the debt is the fact that you can use it and buy whatever you want. But something which is physical and you have control of it, you don't need lumdus. You don't have to come on to whether you can buy milk with it.
What?
You still own it. You own it. You happen to have a choy. You happen to owe money to the bank, and it may or may not be worth, being paid it, but you do own it. Now, what it's worth for Bukhar is another question. Because when the Bukhar gets pishnayim in the asset, he also has to get pishnayim in the choyv. So, what? Yeah. The halacha is when a Bukhar, the same way he does get pishnayim, but he also gets a double share of all of the debts. So if the house is underwater, it's not going to help him much. A Bukhar always could be moichel. The Gemara says he can say, "I don't want my pishnayim, and I don't want the extra share in the debt." Okay, good. So we're gonna get to these. Yes, he could. It's matano kari lachmana. A regular Yerusha you can't be masalif yourself from, but the pishnayim you have the right to be mavater on. Yes, if you take your money, you lend it to someone, at that point it's roy, and the Bukhar will not get pishnayim. Okay, well, done. Oh, very good. A money market is a loan, yes, because the money is being lent. Now, the truth is, yesh lodoin, when you have money in a bank, is that roy or is that muxik? Now, although we use the language that we say we deposit money in a bank, but it's not really, what does it mean? You're lending the money to the bank. Now, the bank might be very secure. It might be available upon demand. They have to pay you whenever you want it. But until they pay it back, it's a loan. It's a debt. It's a choyev that the bank has to you. It's not segregated. The bank makes their money. They don't put it in the vault. They go ahead and they lend it to other people. The moment they lend it out to other people, they're paying you interest on it. They're using that money. So it's a choyev the bank has to you. So in such a case, most poskim say any money you have deposited in a bank will be roy, and the bechor will not get pishnayim. Now, there are some poskim that argue. They say because the bank, they always have the cash available to pay you out. They're mechadish that has din of muchzik. But I think according to Roy Paiskim, it will have a din of Roy, and a Bechor would not get Pishnayim what you have in a bank, for the money that you have in a bank.
That would be the same thing
Again, the cash surrender, that will be different because, as we said last week, when a person dies, I'm not so sure that value goes to Yerusha. I think he loses that value, and then he gets the entire death benefit. In which case, we just have to deal with the death benefit, and that, as we spoke out, that would not be subject to Hilchus Yerusha.
Depends on the policy.
Okay.
So then, the benefit goes up accordingly, according to the cash value, and some
Okay, good. Their life insurance is one of these very convoluted products that there are many different flavors. So it's hard to give rules, but you know, so it's hard to say this is like that. Let's just deal with each case separately.
But money in a bank, that's
roy. It's money that's owed. So money in a bank, according to most poskim, would be roy. A bechor would not get pishnayim. Now, what about a Jewish bank? When you put money in a Jewish bank, what are you doing? Are you lending them money? If you're lending them money, then you can't charge interest. So what's the heter? You have a heter riska. Now, when you give money with a heter riska, is that a loan? So, for those that remember from the shiurim on Hilchos Ribbis, it's half and half. Very good. Whenever you give money with a heter riska, it's a chatzimah v'chatzim pikadon. Half of the money is a loan, and half is a pikadon where they're investing, they're managing on your behalf. So, al picheshbon should come out that if you give money on an iska, on the chatzim milva, half the money you gave, it's a loan. A loan is certainly roi, and there the bechor would not get pishnayim. On the other hand, on the chatzim pikadon, that is a pikadon. The same way if you give someone an asset and he's going to manage it, he's going to hold it for you. Or if you have a partnership with someone where he's going to hold your thing and manage your money for you. So that's not roy. That's a pikadon. That's mochzer. Good. So there, l'chayr should come out that there should be a chelik b'chor on the chatzim pikadon, not on the chelik hamilva. But now the problem is, as you pointed out, that it really should depend where this bank is located. Because let's on the chelik hamilva, there's no chelik b'chor, there's no pishnayim. The chelik pikadon, the part that's a pikadon, the bank is just holding for you and investing for you. There, that should be subject to pishnayim. Problem is that what are they doing with this? What is this pikadon being invested in? So it's a bank. The bank's going to take the money and lend it out to someone else. So the fact that it's pikadon just means it's like you're the one who's lending it to that third person. But it's still a loan. It's vizuroi. And therefore, there shouldn't be a chelik b'chor, there shouldn't be pishnayim on either part. Whatever the bank is doing, what? Very good. So it should depend where you have this deposit. If your deposit is an American branch, where the money that they're using is being lent out to, for argument's sake, to Goyim, so then there won't be any Pishnayim. On the Chelek HaMilva, there's certainly no Pishnayim. On the Chelek HaPikadon, that would be Roy. But if you're depositing the money in a bank in Eretz Yisrael, so the Chelek HaPikadon that you give them, what are they doing? They're not lending it out. Because they have a problem. What they're doing is they're giving it out be'iska to another yid. So then, that chelik pikadon, half of it is being given over as a halva, and half is a pikadon. So it should come out al pichejman that the bechor should get pishnayim in a quarter of the deposit. Now you probably have to then, if you want to make life more complicated, you have to make an adjustment for some of the money is not being lent out at all, and that the bechor would get. And connected to that, you have to make an adjustment. Some money is being lent out to Arabs or to Goyim, which is a straight halva. So in halacha l'maaseh, they had to figure out what's roy and what's mufzik. It is a pikadon. What's happening is that they're taking the pikadon and they're using that pikadon to give out as an iska to another party. So that it's like you gave it be'isko directly to that person, and that's why you're entitled to a share of the profits or what you would call the interest. But it's skipping the level. When they're lending it to that third person, they're acting as your shliach, as your agent. And it's your pikadon, and that's why you're entitled to those revachim.
I mean, every time you have a
partner, the partner has a duty of care. He has to guard it, and if he's peshe, if he's negligent, he's responsible. Now, this is all again. In Lamaista figuring out what the pishnayim is, it's virtually impossible. Lamaista, you do find by a heter riska, although technically it's a chatzim over chatzim pikadon, you'd rather find a three-way machlokes how to deal with it in Hilchos Bechor. Some say like what we just said. Chatzim milva does not have pishnayim, chatzim pikadon does. Others say the entire amount has pishnayim, and they say that even the milva is not a real loan. They say you can't go ahead and do what you want. It's not lemishtid be'shichra. It's collateral for the chatzim pikadon. And once it's a mashkin, they say the bechor gets pishnayim in the entire amount. And on the other extreme, you have some poskim that say the entire thing is considered roi.
And they say even though a pikadon there is considered mosik in this pishnayim, in a case of a heter iska where it's obvious to everyone you're not getting back that pikadon, they're paying you out with cash, you have no intention of being a partner taking possession of whatever that investment is at the end of the day. So there, and the Shevet HaLevi and the Beris Yehuda are both machriya like this. They say that today, even with the heteriska, there would not be a pishnayim at all, and it would all be considered din of roi, and the bechor and pashut would share equally. Now, another interesting shaila is what happens if a person owns stocks? Is that called roi or is that called mochzik? Roi, mochzik. Okay, what? It's like this. So technically speaking, it should be considered mochzik. Because the same way if you own an asset, that's considered a mochzik. If you have a partnership, that's also considered a mochzik. And even if you have someone else managing that partnership for you, you're a silent partner, but since you own a share of that asset, that should be mochzik, and the bechor should get pishnayim. So we have two complications with this way of looking at it. The first is that we've spoken at a number of times from the Igros Moshe. Igros Moshe has a chiddush. He's bothered by the question of how do you ever own stocks in companies that are open on Shabbos, they're dealing with macholos asuros, ribis, suri hana, the works. So what does he say? He says that when you own shares of a company, if you own a couple of shares, he says you're not really a partner. You're just buying the rights to future profits, to future dividends. He says it's a loy bala oilam. How the kinyan works, he says, is a chiddush. But he says you're not a true partner. If you're a true partner, you're going to have serious problems with Shabbos and Ribbis and other issues. Now, if we follow this Igros Moshe, which I think many people are makel, I mean, people do not hesitate to buy mutual funds or to buy stocks. They do not investigate what they do and whether there are any halacha problems. So if you follow this Igros Moshe, then what you're really buying is just some right to future dividends. Then it's very yitachin. That's not called mochzik. It's not something tangible. You're not a partner. When you have shares in Microsoft, you don't own 1/1,000,000,000th of their headquarters. You just have some right or some claim against future assets. So perhaps it's roi. Now, you know, even if you're going to look at stocks as a real partnership, we should also have to look at what the underlying company owns. If you have a partnership in Citibank, so if the value comes from their loan portfolio, the same way if you lent the money directly, that's certainly roi, not mochzik. So over here as well, if you own it indirectly, it shouldn't be any better, and therefore it should have a din of roi. There is a chiddush, the Emek HaTshuvos in Chelek Gimel Siman Kuf Yudayin has a chiddush. What he says is like this. He says, although technically speaking these arguments are correct, but he says roi means, it's b'chol asher yimatzei loy. What does that mean? It means when the item is mechusar guvayna, the father has to go ahead and collect it. He doesn't have a tachas yodai. That's considered roi, and that there's no pishnayim. When you own stocks in a company, is that mechusar guvayna? Do you have to go ahead and collect something? He says, no. It's true the underlying value, it might come from loans, it might come from intangibles, but what you're dealing with is the stock, this share. This share is something which is traded on its own. Now, the reason why people buy it is because it has this underlying loan portfolio. But Zogli Emek HaTshuva, since today it's an asset that's traded, you don't have to be, it's not Mechusar Guvayno, it's not like the father had the share and one day he'll use the share to collect something else. It's something which today has its own value, it's traded on its own, that is Mechusar Tachas Yodai, and he paskins that there would be Pishnayim in these stocks. You still will have to deal with your problem, and that is if it's in a margin account. So when you have a margin account, the clearinghouse has the right to take these shares and lend it out to someone else who wants to sell the stock short. Now, certainly if it's lent out, the father didn't own the shares at the time of his death. He had a claim, the clearinghouse had an obligation to replace it, to give it back to him, but that certainly would be roi, that would not be mochzik, and certainly there would be no pishnayim in such a case. Now again, in Metzias, I don't know if you have any way of tracking whether at the moment that the person died it was lent out or not. I don't even think they specify shares.
How do you value at the time of death? Pishnayim?
Yes, pishnayim is at the time of death. If something appreciates after death, so generally the Bukhar does not get pishnayim. Now there are differences. Shvach, what?
Depreciates?
then it's not so relevant because you're going to end up taking the shares. But it, in general, if there's any change, if it goes up in value because the item changed, it was improved, certainly there's no pishnayim. If it goes up in value, just, you know, it was nisiyakir, nothing changed, just the market value went up, there the bechor would get pishnayim in most cases. Stocks are actually an interesting case because they go up because it really depends. If it goes up in value because the economy changed, there was a new jobs report and all stocks went up, so that's nisiyakir, and there arguably a bechor would get pishnayim in whatever his share is. On the other hand, if it went up in value because the company did well, so you have an interesting question, because it went up in value because of an action, because of the employees that were doing things that made the company more valuable. On the other hand, it wasn't the Yarshim were completely passive. They didn't do anything. So is that called Shvachta Memel, or is that called Shvachta Ayidei Maisa? So it does sound like from the Sugyum Babasum Kufchav Dalid, it sounds like since ultimately the shareholders, the ones that paid the employees to do the work, and it's their salary came from the assets that belong to the shareholders, so that would probably be considered Shvach Ayidei Maisa, and therefore if it goes up in value because of the company did well, there would be no Pishnayim. Now again, it's going to complicate matters tremendously to figure out how much of the value went up Ayidei Maisa because of what the company did, and how much of the shares went up because of the economy. I don't know, I guess you can compare it to the rest of the market. It's very complicated entire. Correct. From the after he dies, even if there is a pishnayim, if it goes up in value, or if there's shvach that comes lachamisa, the bechor does not get pishnayim.
Until
he says, "I want to do a chalukah." Once he says, "I want to do the chalukah," if the other brothers schlep it out, at that point he will get pishnayim. But until he's magala das, okay, I want my share, I want to split, then he does not get the shvach. Dividends are probably roi. If it's, again, it will run into this problem of shvach. If the company earns money and then distributes those shares to its shareholders, so if it earned it ayidei maisa, so then the bechor would not get pishnayim in that. It's only when it's distributed, then it's his. Once it's his, he will be able to get it. Correct. I think the one takeaway is virtually every case that we discussed is a machlokes, and there's no clear hachra. It is, if you have a case where there's a yerusha where it's just there's no tzavo and everything's going with pishnayim, I pity the dayanim, because it's going to be somewhere between difficult and impossible to figure out exactly what the pishnayim is. Besides the machlokes in halacha, just the metzias, figuring out what, you know, what was owned at the time of death is very difficult. It's another very good reason to write a tzava and make it very clear what you want to go to each child. Good. So that's a discussion for a future share, what you could do and what you can't do. Correct. So that amount. Okay. So we have that discussion. What it means to own a share. That's what we said. We have to discuss what it means to own a share. Do we go with the Igros Moshe? Do we go? You're a real shutif. If you're a real shutif on the hard assets that they own, that's certainly muhsik because it's a hard asset. On the debt, that's something which is probably just roi. Correct. The receivables are certainly roi. With the receivables, everyone would get an equal share. Really, what happens is that the receivables, everyone would get an equal share on the hard assets. You know, on the hard assets that the business owns, there the bechor would get pishnayim.
If you were to sell that business, the market value of that business would be determined by a larger part than the account receivable. Mm-hmm. Have you determined what the price and value of the business?
What would really happen is when you have Yarshim that get a Yerusha, they don't Yarshim the resale value. They Yarshim the business itself. So at that point, the Bechor would not get a Pishnayim the receivables. On their hard assets, he would get Pishnayim. Now, if they want to do Chalukah and they want to sell it, then they'll figure out what they'll have. They'll have to work with an accountant what percentage of the value belongs to each of them. But you don't Yarshim resale value. You Yarshim the business itself, and that will end up with a interesting kind of partnership.
Everything.
Physical
hard assets of
whatever it is. Some of it is hard assets. Some of it is intangible. Some of it is goodwill. The Yorshim get everything. Correct. So intangibles are a problem. It's a problem. And it's a problem because we discussed last week something which is aimed by mamish is not subject to Yerusha at all. And you have to figure out what is this. So again, the Pesach Choshen says that if it's something that comes along with the physical, you know, that it comes along, if it's not a distinct thing, it can't be separated, then it could be it comes along with the physical assets. So if you're dealing with debt that's owed to the business, that would be roi. But if you're dealing with, if the business itself gets divided and the physical assets get divided and there's a pishnayim, so that goodwill which is can't be separated might mimelo come along. What? Good. These are good shailos. That's true. You're paying for a lot of intangibles. And intangibles are very hard to value or to figure out what a bechor gets. And achanami. Okay, I just want to finish up by myself. Now, one shayla that comes up all the time. It was actually a few months ago. Three brothers came. The parents had passed away. There was a bechor, and there were two pshutim. Everyone got along well, and they had a certain amount of assets. There was money in a bank. There was some real estate, which they agreed to divide up. The bechor would get pishnayim in whatever was muchzik, roy. They would split equally. Everything was being done b'shalom. Now the problem is that the father, when he passed away, had left over a certain amount of debts. Part of it was actually owed to the children. The children had paid his medical expenses and for his care the last few years. So there was a Yerusha. There was, let's say, about $800,000 of Yerusha. And there were $200,000-$300,000 of debts that needed to be paid. So the brothers had the following shaila. The Bukhar said, let's pay off the debts with the money we have in the bank. Once we pay with the bank, so then what's left over is the real estate. The real estate is mochzer. I'll get my pishnayim. The other brother said, not so fast. Let's use the house to pay off the debts, and we'll leave the money in the bank. The money in the bank is all roy, and that we split equally. So how do you deal with this? So, like many of the issues that we have in by Bukhar, it's actually a three-way machlokes. Some people can say you pay completely with the roi. Some people say you pay completely with the mochzik. And other people can say you split it. You go to the Yehuda and the Chassam Sofer, and what seems to be the maskana of the Pesach Teshuva says, you basically prorate it. You figure out the total assets, how much of it is roi, how much of it is mochzik. Neither the Bechor nor the Pashut should have the right to impose what their preference on the other, and therefore you pay prorated, and whatever's left, you split based on the Seder HaYerusha. It depends what he wrote, but in this case there was no tzava whatsoever. Now it does seem al pi halachim ikar hadin, most places can say it should be prorated. The reason to go to the bechor or the pashut are technical reasons with hilchus shibudim. Some places can say that you can always force the baal chayiv to take the worst assets, and since the debt that's not collected is the worst asset memeil, that's why you pay with roy. Others say you can't give a Baal Choyv another Choyv, you have to give and pay something else. It's a technical machloikas in Hilchos Gevias Choyv. But conceptually, everyone agrees it should be prorated. One last shaila, this is the Avnei Nezer dealt with this case. There were three brothers, a Bechor and two Pshutim. The father passed away. So one Pashut said, okay, I'm a Pashut, you're the Bechor, so you get Pishnayim, you get half the estate, and us two will split the other half. We'll each get a quarter. The third brother said, nothing doing. We're three brothers, I believe in equality, I don't care about Hilchos Bechor, I want a third of the estate. And he refused to go along, there was no tzava, he went to court, and he was able to get a third of the estate. So, the other pashut said to the Bechor, listen, I'm going to follow halacha, I'm just going to take a quarter, and you know, now Bechor, it's a terrible thing that my brother stole from you. The Bechor turned around and said, not so fast. He stole from both of us. Because al pi halacha, we're partners over here. I own half of it, you own a quarter, and our brother owns the other quarter. If he went ahead and he took a third, So that extra 8% that he took, he stole from me and he stole from you. We should share the loss. The Pashat said, what are you talking about? He doesn't care about me. He's not upset about, he agrees I should get an equal share. He's upset about you. He doesn't want the Bechor to get more than him. He's not stealing from me, he's stealing from you. And therefore he said, you have to absorb the entire loss. So Avnei Nezer has a very interesting tshuva. He says it depends when you do the chalukah. He says if the third brother grabs a third of the assets and runs off and says, I'm not paying, he says, then the Bechor is right. If you have shutfim and someone steals something from the assets of the shutfis, so they split the loss, they absorb the loss prorated, and therefore each of them, whatever's left, the Bechor will get two-thirds of whatever is left, they'll share the hefzid. However, Zakhni Avnei Nezer, if the brother that was cooperating takes his share first, he takes his quarter, and then afterwards that third brother comes and takes a third, he takes extra. So once the Pashut already took his share, so then the Gneva happened from the Bechor's Chelek, and he has to absorb the loss. Zakhni Avnei Nezer, in such a case, we help the Pashut. We try to let him do a chalukah before this third brother does a geneva, and then he gives Musar against the Bechor for trying to take advantage of this brother that was trying to do the right thing. Now, Ladino, it's a bit tzarchi, and there's a nesivus that although partners, the halacha is, mamakum hefzid, a partner can be chalik shleil das. A partner has the right to go ahead. If he sees a loss, he can quickly take his share and run. But the nesivus writes, that's only when the loss is not guaranteed, it can be avoided. If it can be avoided, I can go ahead and grab my share and let you fight for your share. However, the Nesiva says, in a case where the hefzid already happened, there's no way we can recover the loss. There's a debt. There's a guy that owes partners $10,000, two 50-50 partners. So if you see that it's going to be difficult to collect the debt, you can collect your $5,000 and let your partner worry about his. But if you see already it's impossible to collect the entire amount, the person declared bankruptcy, there's only $5,000 left. He said, now you're only partners in the remaining $5,000. So you can only take $2,500. You can't take your full share. So it'll come out, if the brother, the pashut, has already threatened or it's impossible to force him to give the right amount, then l'chor d'Avnei Nezer halacha would not be true. There, everyone would share the loss equally. It's only in a case where ayudei tircha, you have a way, if you try hard enough, you could recover. So there, the Avnei Nezer's psak would be is that if the pasha can get his share out first, then he can leave the Bechor to worry about his chelik. Okay, next week, Rimet Hashem, we're going to start the sugya that everyone's been waiting for. We're going to be talking about the din of Havaras Nachla. When a person, we discussed the Seder HaYerusha, we're going to be discussing whether a person can change the Seder HaYerusha, and we'll begin the discussion of how to do it, l'halacha.